So you'll remember that Canto 21 of the Paradise ended with this shocking cry that had resounded through the sphere of Saturn and had sounded like overwhelming thunder to Dante. And this was at the end of the canto, which had begun with the myth of Semele, who had asked to see Jupiter face to face rather than through the way that the gods are usually mediated to human beings. And the shock had been so much that she had turned to ash and had dissolved onto the ground. And then we'd heard about Peter Damian, who had learnt the mistake of trying to discipline himself through church measures into becoming aligned with the divine, and had realised that it was more about opening himself up to become capable of that contemplative vision which sees to the heart of things, that can participate in the essence of life itself and so be filled from the outside in. All that is now active and alive as we enter Canto 22, where Dante seeks to enter more into this domain of Saturn, this Saturnine, saturating presence of the divine. He's right at the top now of these seven planetary spheres that have been readying him more and more. And it's as if he is close now to the last step of becoming capable of not just gazing on the lights around him, but maybe even gazing into the divine presence itself, like the contemplatives do. But this cry, this shout of thunder, has terrified him once again, as well it might. And Canto 22 opens with him clinging to Beatrice. He says that he held to her, looked to her, like a terrified child grown pale will turn to its mother when something has truly shocked it. And what this moment might be like for Dante here in the high heavens, I don't know, I wondered whether it's a bit like the crashing opening chord of the last movement of Saint-Saëns' Third Symphony, the organ symphony. If you've ever heard it, you'll know that it begins with this almighty C major chord from the grand organ that absolutely fills and shakes the concert hall. And it's a glorious moment, announcing something tremendous in this last movement. But the shock of it can be terrifying, and I could easily imagine that if you took your young child to hear the symphony, that moment might make them cry. It might just be overwhelming. And I think Dante is experiencing that, but on a kind of heavenly scale now. The shock of the glory is too much for him. And so he turns to Beatrice, and Beatrice says to him, "Here's what's going on." I think what she says to Dante is that that cry you have just heard is from these souls in the sphere of Saturn who long for all human beings to share in this divine sight that they have become capable of. But that prayer that all human beings might share in the divine light can seem terrible, terrifying, like actually a judgment, a condemnation to those souls who aren't ready for it. It appears like a sword of vengeance from on high. But that is a perception. That is the presence of God in those who see themselves cast in a terrible light by that presence. They had no idea that such glory existed. They turned in on themselves, as perhaps even Peter Damian had been at risk of doing in his earlier life, when he had apparently received the glory, particularly of the church, when he received the cardinal's hat. He became a prince of the church. If you rest there, if you think that is what this journey is really about, it's going to be terrifying to you. This is about something else entirely, Beatrice says. And I think that what she intimates to him is that in order to see the essence of the divine, you must first be able to tolerate the essence of yourself, because it's that which becomes the receptacle that receives the divine light. And if, as it were, the moment that divine light enters you, you see first in yourself shadows, errors, sins, failings, things that shame you, things that fill you with guilt, it's that shame and guilt that will shape your experience of the divine. The divine won't be able to enter into you. And that's why Dante has gone on this extraordinarily long journey in order to understand himself fully, completely, to see the light and the shade, so that when the divine light approaches him, he's not shocked by himself, and so cuts out the divine light, feels he's being judged, experiences that as a moment of terrible cutting down, but knowing himself fully can receive the divine light and life fully. Beatrice says to him, "Let my words now guide you, so that you can turn to look at the lights that are now flowing down the ladder into the sphere of Venus. And if you do let that sense guide you," by which I think she means if you do gather up all that you've experienced on this journey now and allow yourself to become open, as Peter Damian had described the true contemplative's life when the shaft of the divine light had entered his human light and so had enabled him to shine with the divine light. "If you allow that to happen to you now," Beatrice says, "you will see more and more of the place where we are." Dante gains courage at her words and is able to turn to look back at those who have cried out so mightily, to stand that little bit more in his own presence, in their presence, with Beatrice right behind him. But he's still anxious. He says that he's still unsure. He's in powerful transition in this sphere of Saturn. Much is changing very rapidly inside him as he adjusts to this new light. And it turns out that his most immediate desire is actually to know who the brightest light that is now coming towards him, who that person is. It's as if he's not quite sure of himself. He's saying, like a child might say, "But who are you? Who are you?" That is the state of mind that he's still moving through in his anxiety. And the light speaks to him. It has this divine telepathy. It knows what Dante desires, and it's full of grace. It comes towards him, it articulates his thoughts for him, but does so in such a way as to show more than actually Dante knows at this moment, because I think Dante's real need is not to know who this light is, but is to know who he is in this fullest extent of seeing himself in the round. So the light does grant his request, it does reveal who he is, but it also tells Dante a whole lot more besides, which actually will enable him to become fully himself and so receive the divine light as well. He reveals himself as Benedict, the founder of Western monasticism. He describes how he set up his monastery on Mount Cassino. But he does it in a very interesting way. He reminds Dante that before he appeared on Mount Cassino to set up his Christian monastery, the place had been inhabited by pagans, by those who had worshipped the divine in different ways. And what Benedict tells Dante is that they didn't know about the figure of Jesus, that they lived in a time before the one who came down from heaven had revealed to humanity how to see the divine in this new way. And I think that what this is particularly getting at here is not that the pagans had been terribly mistaken, and that they were therefore on the way to condemnation unless they had said yes to Christ in that basic Christianity 101, do you know Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Saviour kind of way. It's something much more profound that's going on that Dante needs to grasp and wrestle with here. And I'm borrowing here from Owen Barfield and his idea that human consciousness shifts and changes over periods of time, and that the significance of the Christian dispensation and the figure of Jesus have been that it shifted human consciousness a step forward. In particular, it was the moment when human beings could know themselves fully as individuals, so that their I am, their individuality, could become capable of receiving the divine I am. And so God came to be perceived as the one God at the time of Jesus, and because the individual I am of the human soul could become capable of receiving and reflecting the light of the divine I am, precisely what Peter Damian had described to Dante as the goal of the contemplative life. And not just imposing Owen Barfield's reading here, I think that in a nascent form it's actually implicit in the canto, because one of the things that's really striking about Canto 22 is that more or less everybody is described in terms of their parentage. So we remember that Dante had described himself as the child before Dante's mother, and later in the canto the planets are going to be named, but they're going to be named in terms of their parentage, where they came from. And I think that this is setting up a sense that Dante's transition, his change of consciousness in Saturn, is becoming aligned with the change of consciousness that is the Christian moment as well, and that those two dynamics have got to come together for Dante to continue on his journey deeper into paradise. And so what Benedict is telling him is that his Western monastic tradition was precisely to set up the ways and means, the practices, the way of mortal life that could bring about what Jesus himself had signaled in his own life, so that human individuals could become capable of divine incarnation, of becoming the receptacle of divine life, because they had become most fully human, because they had seen their I am-ness in the round, much as Jesus had been experienced, and so inspired Benedict and his monks to know themselves as fully human, realizing that that is precisely the way to receive the divine light now, fully and completely. So Benedict, in naming himself, reveals also what his name stands for, what his life stood for, why you might say he's here in this sphere of Saturn, explaining these things to Dante now. It's not just a checklist, oh, there's Saint Benedict in the seventh sphere. Benedict is showing Dante the very dynamic, the very state of mind that his name can be associated with, that is about becoming capable of this contemplative being. But Dante is still cautious, he's still nervous. I think he's beginning to get what Benedict and Beatrice have been saying to him, that he must become the contemplative, that he must become fully capable of receiving and seeing into the divine essence. And it's still terrifying, it's still frightening. And so he replies to Benedict and says, look, have I got enough grace, have I got enough capability to see you as Benedict, to see your human face here and now? You remember that since the sphere of the sun, Dante hasn't actually seen the human faces of the souls, he's just seen their light. He's been aware more and more of their presence, of their vitality, of their luminosity, but hasn't been able to see their human faces. And I think that he's asking Benedict for assurance now. And again, Benedict answers Dante in a way that he needs to try and understand, because Benedict says, well, no, you can't actually. You won't be able to see me until you reach the highest level of the heavens. So this is a really fascinating reply from Benedict, because Dante has said that he feels himself unfolding. He says he feels himself opening up like a rose, a rose opens up, turns to the sun, and can receive the sun's light, therefore. So he's saying that he feels part of himself opening up to be able to receive the divine light, as is as happens in the contemplative's life. And yet Benedict has said to him that he can't see his own, Benedict's, face yet in this moment. That's not going to happen, he says, until they reach actually an entirely new heaven, where there's no pole, there's no celestial northern star that guides humans on Earth, and where there's no space, in fact. It's a completely new space that they're going to have to move into next. I think this is a pivot moment that Benedict is describing to Dante, that, okay, his humanity is now flowering, is now at his fullest. He's seen all of his humanity. But there's a further transition that's got to come, which is now actually being able to see the divine light on its own terms, which of course isn't dependent upon the human domain at all, for all that it shines right through the human domain. And I think that's what Benedict is intimating to Dante now, that actually this signals another shift change, in fact, which is going to be the last section of the paradise. Benedict says they're going to climb Jacob's ladder, the patriarch Jacob having had the great vision of the angels descending and ascending upon the ladder that left the cosmos he knew entirely into the divine realm. But Benedict says to Dante, in effect, you need to be able to see this for yourself, rather than just see in me how the human and the divine comes together, which in a way is what Dante was asking when he asked to see Benedict's human face, as well as appreciate more and more the divine light that was reflecting in Benedict's light. Dante needs, we can even dare to say, to become a full incarnation of God himself, to become fully human and to know the divine reflecting fully in him himself, in order to then see that in everyone else around him as well. And that can't happen here in the domain of Saturn. Benedict then goes on to describe how human beings might yearn to be able to climb this ladder. This is their goal, their destiny, their return that human life is about. And that is what he had tried to instill and make tangible for people in the Benedictine rule, in the monastic way of life. But he says that when he looks down on Earth now, he sees that he might as well have used a parchment that he wrote his rule upon for something else, because the monastic life has lost its way. It's obsessed with worldly things, not human things. It's another one of these sad and terrible condemnations of the Christian way of life, as heavenly souls like Benedict see it. But of course, also underlines that Dante is seeing these things in order to renew and, I think, widely extend the Christian dispensation. Dante sees himself as bringing not just a revival or even a renaissance, but a completely new movement forwards. This is the Christianity beyond Christianity that Dante is becoming attuned to. And I think, as if to underline that, actually, Benedict ends his lament stroke condemnation of the church and monastic life in particular by saying, but look, we're talking about divine things ultimately here. And much as the people of Israel must have felt everything was falling apart from them in Egypt, and yet they were saved by the crossing of the Red Sea into something extraordinary and different that they couldn't possibly have imagined, so, Benedict says, that is still possible now for Christianity, even in its dire and lost state. And with that, Benedict withdraws and rejoins the other light on the ladder. And Dante now undergoes another transition. Even in this single canto, it's very striking how he moves through Saturn really quite quickly. I think it's because what this is emphasizing is that it's desire itself that will take him into this higher realm, that will enable him to climb the ladder and move into this entirely new part of, well, it's not even the cosmos, it's the divine realm in itself. He says that Beatrice moved up behind him and, swifter than thought, at the speed of light, journeyed with him up the ladder, carried him up the ladder. He says to us readers, he turns to us readers and addresses us directly, that now when he thinks of this, he hopes that he will return there after he's died. And so he spends his time now weeping and lamenting for the ways that he falls short of ascending that ladder. He, I think, must have spent the rest of his life after he returned trying to see himself fully, because he'd realised that it's only by seeing himself fully and being able to tolerate that, that when the divine light finally entered him after his death, he wouldn't be so shocked at himself and the way that he had was illuminated by that divine light, that he wouldn't, as it were, have fallen back down the ladder. He knows that that is a key part of this great task. And as if to underline that, he finds himself next, having whizzed up the ladder faster than you can describe, in the sphere of the fixed stars. And so they've moved beyond the seven planets and are now in the sphere of the fixed stars, in this psycho-cosmology of the medieval perception. And in particular, he finds himself in the constellation of Gemini, in that part of the sky which is filled with the presence of Gemini. Just in parenthesis, Dante describes that as the constellation that follows Taurus. You've got this sense of dynamic following that I think is indicating this great shift of consciousness in all humanity as much as the shift of consciousness in Dante himself. The two things are coming together here. And it's worth reflecting for a moment on how Dante sings the praises of Gemini. Remember that he knows himself now to have been born both of natural processes that reach up even as God's divine spirit reaches down to fill we human beings, so that we have this dual aspect that comes together in our one humanity of being human and being divine, of being natural and being supernatural. And he sings the praises of Gemini. Remember that like the planets that echo aspects of divine life, so too the constellations echo aspects of divine life. And it's like Dante is seeing the very moment of his birth, that blessed moment for him, which we all have, seeing how the very particularity of that moment, born under the sign of Gemini for him, in his particular time, in his particular place, it's seeing precisely that moment of his birth on Earth in the round, in all its aspects, in all its specificity, in all his I am-ness, that enables him to become a point that can receive the divine light, that can receive the divine I am-ness. It's when you see your particularity in its fullness that actually you become capable of receiving everything else in its fullness as well. That is the mystery, if you like, of the incarnation. We're not asked to become some generic, perfect, identikit human being. We're asked to become ourselves. When we can know and love ourselves and all that happened in our inner life, in our time and place, when that can all be accepted and said yes to, that is what enables the moment of divine light to enter into us. It's the way of life that was lived by Jesus, even to the point of death. It was the way of life that Benedict developed to be able to see not just your time and place, but also your inner time and place, if you like, through the monastic way of life. And Dante sees that for himself now. He knows that he's loved by his particular time and place. He's loved by the moment of his birth, by his birth sign. He sees that it radiated God's love directly on him, even as it radiates love on everybody else as well. And in seeing that and knowing it fully and loving it, Beatrice says to Dante, "You're now very close to the full blessedness." Underlying this secret of the incarnation, who would have thought that it's by becoming fully who we are, seeing all that we have been, that is the way that we can rise, that is the way we can hope to rise through the heavens and receive the divine grace to share in the divine life once more. And Beatrice says to Dante, to underline this, look back down where we have come, take it all in. And so Dante, from now, this vantage of the fixed stars, looks back down through the planets. He sees Earth. He describes it as paltry. He sees how earthly concerns that so preoccupy human beings distract and occlude their sight of the divine life, which is actually the source of life on Earth. There's a parallel here with the ancient Greek and Roman dreams, where various figures were said to have had dreams where they rose up from the surface of the Earth through the planetary spheres to the heavens and then looked back down at their life from this vantage of the sub-specie aeternitatis, from the divine perspective, and it gives them a perspective on their life, helps them to live and realign with the divine perspective. And that's part of what Dante experiences now. But as he looks back down through the spheres of Jupiter and the Sun and of Venus and of Mercury and of the Earth and the Moon and of the Earth, he also describes the planets in relation to their parent. So, for example, Saturn is said to be the parent of Jupiter. The Sun is said to be the child of Hyperion. And I think that this beautifully matches Barfield's take on our ascent back to the divine, which he called a final participation with God, final in the sense of telos, direction, goal. This renewed participation in the divine life that comes after the Christian revelation, after the incarnation being revealed as the means of this ascent. And it's a final participation because it remakes what Barfield called the original participation, which was when humanity knew itself to be in this great sea of meaning and life, when breath and wind and spirit were all experienced as part and parcel of the same sense of being alive. But when there wasn't the sense of the individual, and when people knew themselves first as being part of their tribe, of their kin, of their time and place, as part of the collective. And so religiosity had this sense of coming from the outside in, navigating through life, rather than increasingly coming from the inside out, as the contemplative knows it. And so by describing the planets in relation to their parentage, Dante's bringing to mind what had been before and then been, as it were, born in the planets as we know, which is to say the divine life, these different states of mind, the Moon, Mercury, Venus, the Sun, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, these different qualities of experience when gradually paradoxes come together, then we're invited to not just stay with what now we see clearly and manifest as the light of the sun is clear and manifest to us, but to step more and more into the subtle light that becomes brighter, and through Mars and Jupiter and now Saturn, to open up our life, to in a way let go of what we think we know, to become capable of more and more. Remember this dynamic which we've been following and tracking and seeing. And so by bringing to mind what had been before, as Dante looks down now, he's able to see how his shift of consciousness, and which he's experienced now as he's seen himself in all his particularity in the constellation of Gemini, matches the shift of consciousness which humanity itself has been undergoing through the Christian moment, and I think now into this Christianity beyond Christianity, even as he sees how the planets themselves were born of their own parentage, that represents the shift of consciousness which, as it were, they had undergone as divine intelligences in order to be seen as he sees them now. So this Canto 22 of the Paradise is really quite extraordinary, as we might expect, because it's the canto in which Dante leaves the cosmos, even the high heavens, as he had anticipated them, and is on the cusp of entering a completely new part of paradise altogether. And it's extraordinary because it brings together his own journey, his own need to see himself, not just see how the divine is manifest in other souls, as he'd asked Benedict. And he had become able to do that, even as he feels his particularity in the constellation of Gemini and then looks back down how he had travelled all this way. But at the same time, he has a vision, a sense of how this is simultaneously an unfolding for the whole of humanity as Christianity sees it. And so now, as he looks at the planets, he gets a sense of how consciousness itself had come together. Consciousness itself can understand its own journey. And it's by bringing his individuality with his humanity as a whole together that he ends Canto 22, as he describes it to us, as he reflects, as Dante the poet, on what had happened to him as Dante the pilgrim. And as is entirely appropriate, because he's now open to the divine grace, the canto ends with him turning back to the beauty of Beatrice as he awaits to see quite where this is going to take him next.